Oopsla Podcast, Episode 11, A Keynote with Rebecca Wolfsbrock. The Oopsla Podcast brings you up to speed on topics covered at this year's Oopsla Conference, which takes place in October 2008 in Nashville, Tennessee. For more information, visit the website at oopsla.org. The Oopsla Podcast is co-produced by Software Engineering Radio and Dim Sum Thinking. I'm Martin Lippert, your host for this episode. So, welcome everybody to this new episode of the Oopsla Podcast. In this episode, we have another Oopsla keynote speaker on the line, and I'm pretty happy. It's Rebecca Wolfsbrock. So, welcome, Rebecca.
Welcome.
Would you introduce yourself to our listeners?
I am one of the few people that attends the Oopsla conference every year, so I have perfect attendance. I've been known in the object community for a long time as someone who has a practical bent on things. But I enjoy Oopsla and have been there every year.
So what does your work focus on?
Well, these days I spend time working with a variety of different teams and with different design and development approaches. But my focus is on architecture and design. In particular, I'm known for responsibility-driven design, which is a set of informal tools and thinking tools and techniques for people developing object-oriented systems.
So your keynote is called What Drives Design? So can you give us a sneak preview of what you will talk about?
Sure. I don't claim to have all the answers, but I found that the exploration of what makes people who I consider good designers click, how they think about and what motivates them to make certain choices as they structure their software, and what techniques they use is pretty fascinating stuff. I'm even after 20 years, I'm still learning new things. And yes, so I'm in search of effective practices. Having been the inventor of responsibility-driven design that started all these driven approaches, you know, it created the meme, I guess, of being driven. It's interesting for me to see how various techniques and thinking tools and practices fit together or don't. And so that's kind of what the talk is about.
Okay, so can you give us a very brief introduction for those people who haven't been working with responsibility-driven design, what it's about?
Sure. Well, initially, back in the early days of Smalltalk, and that's really where its roots come from, it seems that in order to be an effective, productive small talk designer and developer, you had to think about problem solving in a different way. I started out as someone who was concerned with how do I explain what really goes on in people that are very highly productive, because we were chartered with, you know, promoting object design and object technologies, but also trying to get people who weren't familiar at all to start developing and thinking about it in a productive way. And so responsibility-driven design was formed by thinking about and observing practices and coming down with a very simple set of principles that would drive a designer to make choices and create well-structured object applications. So that's kind of its history. One of the things that it promotes is, and these today, these sound like, wow, these are just obvious kind of things, but developing to a higher level rather than worrying about implementation details, think about the interfaces to objects and classes, programming in that way so that you can hide the interior details, and think about at a higher level first in terms of responsibilities or general statements about work and between objects, and then fill in the interior details after you've agreed upon contractually how they're going to divide the work up.
So it sounds pretty related to the design principle of separation of concerns and those similar design principles. Would you agree or disagree?
Well, yes, it's that, but it's also how do I then structure a number of collaborating, interacting objects to work together? And so it's more than just separating concerns. Actually, with an object-oriented system, you don't tend to decompose things so much as develop a set of collaborating, interacting network of objects. And so you have to think about what roles there are and how should they interact. So it's separation of concerns, but then how then do I structure a network of collaborators?
Ah, okay. So in the abstract of your keynote, you also briefly mention all the other driven style design approaches, like test-driven development or behavior-driven development. So what do you think, how is the relationship between responsibility-driven design and maybe some of these other driven design styles?
I think they all have, it's interesting to have created this meme of being driven, but and it's really a code word for what is your focus or primary emphasis. And I think that there are a lot of compatibilities between the style of test-driven development and behavior-driven development. Is just a nuance on that, in my opinion. I don't mean to slight that in any way, but if you think about test-driven development and its practices, again, coined by Kent Beck in talking about XP. Kent also has Smalltalk roots, by the way. So perhaps there's a reason why there's some compatibility in thought. The idea of test-driven development is to think about can I define what the interface is in the simplest way by writing a test, and then fill in the details to make it pass the test. And so if you follow that practice, the relationship between that and responsibilities is I put the right details on the inside and worry about what is the right interface first before I fill in those details. And so in some sense, it's very complementary.
What do you think were the differences between those two approaches?
Well, I think that test-driven development, if it's practiced the way I know some of my colleagues and friends practice it, they don't bother necessarily thinking a bit and doing a set of responsibilities for an object first. They just plunge right in with a test and trust that they will come to a well-structured object by using refactoring techniques when things get ugly on the inside or it gets too difficult to test. And so the difference there, and I don't think it's a significant one in my opinion, is that sometimes some people find it useful to sketch out generally what an object might be before they just plunge right in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see. Can you tell us a bit about the differences or similarities between responsibility-driven design and domain-driven design?
Yeah, I can. It's interesting. Again, Eric Evans, came up with domain-driven design, certainly came out of the school of, he went to the University of Illinois at Urbana and worked with Ralph Johnson. So there are, again, roots in Smalltalk thinking, and he certainly knew about responsibility-driven design. But his focus in his work has been on getting a very nicely defined domain model and figuring out the responsibilities of different kinds of domain objects and expressing their implementation in a way that preserves or captures the essence of the kinds of terminology you would use talking to someone who is a subject matter expert in that domain. So those values are pretty complementary with responsibility-driven design. In fact, in my design classes, we do a little bit of domain modeling and expose some of those principles. But I'd say it's an extension of that to finding the core domain. So it's quite a significant advancement in that way. But it's, to me, it seems perfectly logical when you need a domain model using object technology.
Oh, yeah.
Not always do you need that. If you're, so you can use objects without having to represent a domain concepts.
And what about behavior-driven development?
So in some sense, the behavior-driven guys, and I view it as a refinement of test-driven development, take it pretty seriously that, again, just like in domain-driven design and practices where you're trying to have intention revealing names for the methods and the classes that you define, they're taking it and saying, well, tests should be behavior-specific named units as well. So in some sense, they're giving a structure to not only it's not a test until it's been written. It's a behavior specification before I program an implementation of that behavior. So it's, again, trying to, all of, you know, that approach that they're using is essentially putting on primary in development specification of what something is before its implementation. And using that approach in a programming way. So I find compatibility with what they do as well. There are some differences, but you know, I don't think they're, you know, enough to quash, you know, they're all common roots, I think.
What do you think, what would you recommend to people maybe starting developing a large system? What should they use a combination of all these different styles, or should they decide for one style, or what do you think?
Well, I actually think that developing large systems is something that takes understanding at least a plan for a structuring and relationships between not just objects, but also components and major architectural elements. So it's a bit more I'm going to say there's larger structures and systems and subsystems and relationships to be thought, worked out. Personally, I have known a number of people who've taken responsibility-driven design principles and not just apply them at an object-oriented level, you know, object-oriented programming, but also to structuring systems. So I feel comfortable with, when I work with people at that level too. But I think that in some sense, if I'm working on a larger system, that understanding roles and relationships at a first cut of the major elements so that we can work in parallel, agree upon an interface, recognizing that it will change, allows a bit of freedom in development. So that kind of practice of understanding the contractual or the relationships between design elements is even more imperative. So then you can apply the techniques of various, test-driven development, if that's what you want to do, at a level of implementing a component or a set of classes.
So what do you think that managing the dependencies in a larger system between components, between individual classes, is it the most important thing, maybe?
Managing the dependencies and making sure that you're not creating them, let's say, accidental dependencies, is actually really, really important on large systems. And I actually think that some of the more modern tools that I've recently encountered that allow you to visualize these things without having to, wade through masses of code yourself can really help you understand the structural relationships that do exist. Now, it would be nice if we could just start out and keep things clean, but I think that from time to time we need some of those visual assists to help us see what's really there.
Yeah, but sometimes the number of connections gets surprisingly high between all those components if you haven't focused on it for some time.
Oh, absolutely. It requires a discipline to keep it clean, but maybe it's because I've been spending some time helping people over the last a couple of years in my consulting practice with refactoring and cleaning up and really understanding not starting from scratch, but understanding what the responsibilities should be and untangling them, that I find that not only is it good to it would be nice if you started from scratch, but a lot of people are in the middle of stuff when I go around. So it's discovering techniques and tools that help you both visualize and then maintain that understand the relationships is I think going to be very important.
Okay, but you think that, for example, responsibility-driven design is not only helpful if I start implementing a system, but also if I try to untangle an existing highly coupled system into different components?
Yeah, it's helpful. It's not the only tool in your toolkit, but if I think about, and I was just working with a client a few weeks ago where we were looking at identifying the responsibilities of existing components. And if they seem to be taking on too much, we used role stereotyping, that's something that I also introduced with responsibility-driven design, and listed their responsibilities even at a high level and said, wow, that's a real candidate for refactoring into smaller, clearer roles. So it's a way of, without just, it's a bit of pre-planning, if you will, before you go into knowing where the hot spots are. And it can help you think at a higher level of what something is before you go dive in and perform heart and lung transplant refactorings, which are difficult no matter what you have to, whatever techniques you use.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I can definitely understand that. So I've seen myself many systems which were highly coupled, and it was extremely difficult to untangle all those dependencies. So
So in some sense, not just thinking about the dependencies, but what were or are these things responsible for at some general statements, and then are they doing too much, and why are they intertangled at that level can help you think about refactoring tactics.
And I think you will talk about this a bit more in the keynote, or will it be focused on something different?
Oh, I think we are driving, what drives design is clean. Most techniques are driving towards keeping systems, I won't say clean, but keeping them so that they can sustain change.
Having you as a participant of Oopsla from the beginning, I have to ask you the question about your experiences of many years of Oopslas, and then maybe answering or giving people some hints why they should attend Oopsla.
Okay, sure. Uppsala is a place for new ideas and people coming together from a diverse background and mixing it up. And that's what I find very interesting about the conference. It's not just an academic conference. It's always been a mix of practitioners, people building systems using object technology or other technologies. Oopsla is kind of branching out in those ways. People building tools, people doing research, and it's just a great mix-up. It's really exciting. And one of the things that I found over the last few years, and I noticed that in this year's program, they're also working on this, is the Onward track, where you get people really kind of challenging the way we should be thinking about how software is designed or how tools should work. And so you get not just, the latest and greatest mix of people presenting things, but you get some stuff that gets you thinking too.
Okay, so Rebecca, thank you very much for taking the time for this episode, and I'm looking forward to your keynote.
Okay, great. I'll see you at Dupla.
See you at Uppsala. Thank you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Uppsala podcast. If you want to know more about the conference or would like to listen to additional podcast episodes, visit the Uppsala website at uppsala.org. This episode, as well as all other Uppsala podcast episodes, are licensed under a Creative Commons license.